And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Santa Barbara and Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things that impact our lives. Each of my guests will discuss his or her subject and relate it to current events. Politics is very much in the news, and my next guest has a long history of writing and performing comedy. You may have seen him on the Comedy Channel, MTV, or VH1. He's partnered with Meghan McCain, that's right, the daughter of Senator John McCain, to pay tribute to America. We'll discuss the book titled America, You Sexy Bitch. Michael Ian Black is a popular comedian who began his career with The State, a sketch comedy troupe he co-founded at New York University in 1988, which went on to have a successful run on MTV. He then co-created Comedy Central television series Viva Variety, a fake European variety show. From there, he appeared on several television shows before landing the role of Phil Stubbs, the quirky bowling alley manager on NBC's Ed, which ran for almost four seasons. Michael has appeared in several films and is a popular contributor to VH1's I Love the 70s, I Love the 80s, etc. series. Michael is also a stand-up comedian who regularly tours the country. He's married, has two children, and he's joining us from the East Coast. Hi, Michael. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. It's a pleasure to have you on. Loved your book. It was a very interesting premise. You co-authored the book with Meghan McCain, who is the daughter of former presidential candidate John McCain. And on the surface, you two couldn't be more different people. I mean, she's a 20-something. She's gun-loving, a Christian, Republican writer and blogger. And as I said, she's the daughter of the presidential candidate from the 2008 election. You, on the other hand, are married. You're a 40-year-old. You're gun-fearing. You claim to be an atheist, a Democratic comedian, and the son of a lesbian former Social Security employee. So, first of all, how did you two team up to write the book?
Oh, kismet. Let's just call it kismet. I met her very briefly when I was shooting a television pilot. And we kind of got along, and we started following each other on Twitter. And then one night I was up late and saw that she was on Twitter and was just sort of struck by the inspiration that we should write a book together. I don't know why I thought that. I do know why. I'd been thinking a lot about politics and was interested in politics, but felt like there wasn't a kind of political book out there for people like me, people who are maybe turned off by the whole process and don't want to read large tomes that are wonky and totally ideological. So I thought maybe I could write one, and Meghan seemed like a natural choice to pair up with.
Well, it's a big undertaking to write a book, and to keep politics from being wonky, as you said, is a very difficult thing to do. How did you, in your mind, know that two very divergent points of view, such as yours and Meghan, would coalesce into a book?
I didn't, but that's the leap of faith that you take when you decide to do a project like this. I just felt like the opposites attract idea would maybe make for a good book. I figured either we'd get along, and that would be a good book, or we'd hate each other, and that might be a better book.
All right. Well, give us the premise of the book, if you will, Michael. I mean, it's an interesting thought process that you went through to come up with the idea behind the book.
Well, once Meghan and I started communicating about what the book would be, we sort of quickly came up with the idea of a road trip, this idea of kind of re-exploring America and talking to sort of everyday people about their feelings about politics, the political process, how engaged they are or unengaged, and then using the sort of itinerary of our tour as a lens through which to look at larger issues that are kind of going on around the country.
All right. And you not only used other outside people to present their points of view, you and Meghan were yourself proxies in the cultural war that's going on. So define, what was your role in the book as a proxy in this cultural war?
I was the elitist liberal snob.
The elitist liberal snob. All right. Fair enough. Now, I found it interesting that Meghan, who is a Republican, obviously daughter of a former Republican presidential candidate, doesn't really buy into the Republican orthodoxy on everything. I mean, such issues such as gay marriage, global warming, decriminalizing marijuana. And I like her phrase that she uses throughout the book. It's taken from Hunter S. Thompson, buy the ticket, take the ride. I thought that was great. You, on the other side of the spectrum, were the Democratic proxy there. So do you buy into all of the Democratic orthodoxy?
I don't know that anybody, any sort of rational human being buys into every item that they're political party seems to want, represent or wants to represent. I certainly don't. I don't even necessarily consider myself a Democrat, although I'm certainly more sympathetic of their beliefs than I am of the Republican beliefs, and I vote Democratic. But I consider myself just more of, I guess, a liberal than anything else.
More of a liberal, and that means that you're farther to the left of the Democratic Party? I'm just trying to get a sense, Michael, of where you fall on the political spectrum.
I think the Democratic Party right now doesn't really have an identity, a cohesive identity, the same way maybe the Republican Party does. And so we tend to govern from the middle and even from center-right sometimes as a nation. And I guess the further I get into politics, the more I sort of come to identify with the liberal wing of the Democratic Party that believes that the government has a role in improving people's lives.
All right. My guest is Michael Ian Black. He's the co-author of America, You Sexy Bee, A Love Letter to Freedom, and we're talking about that particular book. Now, I find it interesting that you say that you don't buy into all of the orthodoxy and that both parties have really lost their way. You write in the book that you feel like America, as a nation, has lost sight of its mission statement. What do you think America's mission statement should be, Michael?
You know, it's a funny thing. I wish I knew. I mean, I think that we're sort of adrift right now, and I wish I had a sort of neat, cohesive mission statement that I could go out there and wave a flag for. I do think we're at a weird period in our nation's history where we sort of have, I don't know, we sort of look like what a lot of Americans look like, where we have a lot of strength, but maybe we're a little bloated, and maybe we're a little out of shape, and we don't quite know how to get ourselves back into fighting form. We see a lot of problems around us, but we don't quite have a clear-eyed solution to them. It seems to me like we're in a little bit of a drift right now, and it's hard to see that. It's hard to be an American and view that. If there's a mission statement that I could get behind, it would be something along the lines of strengthening and protecting and growing our middle class. But you know, that's purely a domestic issue. It doesn't even address sort of our larger role in the world.
Right. Okay. My guest is Michael Ian Black. So, Michael, I guess this malaise that you're talking about, we all feel it on a day-to-day basis. You're just echoing what I think many of my listeners are feeling themselves. The bigger question is, though, is this malaise that we're experiencing a result of the economic downturn of 2007-2008, or was the economic downturn of 2007-2008 a result of the malaise?
I think it's a combination. I think ever since shortly after 9/11, and maybe as we sort of struggled through the first phase of our involvement in Afghanistan, and certainly by the time we entered Iraq, America has felt a little bit adrift. Those, in particular the Iraq War, I think really sort of split the country in terms of not really understanding why we were there, what we were doing, and what we were trying to accomplish. That, I think, sort of set us down this path, and I think the economic meltdown only exacerbated what was already there. I also think there's sort of more fundamental questions about fairness, about the role of corporations, the role of government, that are sort of bedrock issues that inform both those decisions, the decision to go into Iraq and, well, I guess the second one wasn't the decision, but and the economic calamity that followed.
All right, my guest is Michael Ian Black, and he is co-author of America, You Sexy Bee. We're talking about his road trip and what he learned with his co-author, Meghan McCain. So you mentioned fairness, and fairness is going to be a big issue in the upcoming election. In fact, you're hearing that term bantied about a lot. In the book, a bone of contention between you and Meghan was the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. Now, the Supreme Court has ruled that the law is constitutional as a tax, and the Supreme Court allowed states to opt out of the Medicaid portion if they choose. So it was a bone of contention for you and Meghan. So put yourself in Meghan's shoes, if you will, and interpret how she would view the Supreme Court's ruling on Obamacare.
Well, she, like a lot of her brethren in the Republican Party, believes that the whole idea of forcing people to purchase health care is unconstitutional. She believes that the health care system in this country will suffer as a result, and that the cost will further cripple our country and put us into debt that we can't recover from. I don't agree.
Well, I know you wouldn't agree, but it's already been proven that by the Supreme Court, who's ruled on its constitutionality. It is constitutional. It is constitutional, however, as an act, not as a mandate using the Interstate Commerce Clause. So you can take the whether it's constitutional or not off the table. The Supreme Court has ruled in favor of that.
All right, fine, I will.
All right, so it's off the table.
But I wasn't arguing it's constitutional.
Yeah, I know that. I was just trying to put you in Megan's shoes on that. All right, so let's change ground for a minute, because I thought one of the real nice parts of the book is the peacekeeping value between you and Megan as you go on this road trip around the country. Did you find political common ground, not only between the two of you, but with the people that you visited along the way?
Yeah, I think we found a lot of political common ground. And, you know, it's funny, I think most Americans probably aren't that far away from each other politically. It has more to do with our leadership and the media narrative that's being fed to us that has to do with sort of promoting the extremes because it serves their interests. But when we just talk to people one-on-one and talk to each other, you know, we can, I think, agree on most things. We don't necessarily agree on how to achieve those goals, but we can at least agree that the goals are the same.
All right, that seems to make sense. My guest is Michael Ian Black, co-author of the book America, You Sexy Bee, A Love Letter to Freedom. And Michael, on this road trip, the penultimate city on your tour was Washington, D.C. You were in the lion's den of partisan politics. What did you learn from the visit to our nation's capital?
The thing that really struck me, and that was almost startling, was the kind of head-in-the-sand attitude that most of the Congress people and staffers that we met seemed to have. All across the country, people were saying how angry they were, how disillusioned they were, how disenchanted they were, that they felt like the process was broken. And yet, when we got to D.C. and actually started talking to legislators, their attitude was remarkably different. They would acknowledge that people's perception of them was low and that their approval ratings were low, but almost to a man, they would say, yeah, you know what, it's fine. You know, things will get done. We're, you know, slogging through and doing the best that we can. And they seemed to believe it. I mean, it didn't just seem to be boilerplate with them. And it was startling to me because I couldn't tell if the disconnect was coming from the population as a whole or if it was coming from the legislators. But what was startling was that, you know, there's living outside the Beltway, as I do and as you do, you hear so much about this sort of Beltway mentality, this idea that the people who live in D.C. sort of have a different mindset than the people who live outside of it. And I'd never really witnessed that before until I was actually inside the Beltway, and it seemed sort of self-evident to me that that was actually true, that there was a Beltway mentality. And it startled me, and I don't know if I want to go so far as to say it frightened me, but it definitely alarmed me that the people who were sending there to represent us seemed to not have as strong a connection to the people outside of their landscape as I would have liked.
Very interesting point of view. My guest is Michael Ian Black, and we're talking about his book, America, You Sexy Bee. So you were the liberal element of the proxy in this political-cultural war in the book. And I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. How do you see us overcoming these differences and getting the country back on track?
Smarter minds than mine have certainly been at work trying to answer this question. I'm sympathetic to the idea, and I think I believe, that part of the huge problem right now, maybe the single biggest problem, is the corrosive effect of big money in our political process, that in order to run for office, you need to amass a considerable war chest. In order to retain your office, you need to keep amassing considerable war chest. There's very few entities in this country that are capable of contributing on a scale that will allow you to keep your position. And in order to accept those donations, those contributions, there is a kind of inherent quid pro quo. So a lot of representatives find themselves in a kind of tension between their corporate masters, or if you want to take the Republican point of view, you can say union masters, and the population that elected them. Sometimes those interests align, but a lot of times they don't. So you have to ask yourself, who are my legislators actually working for?
Well, that's an important question, but that question, Michael, has been taken off the table by the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United. They ruled that unions and also corporations are essentially people, and they can give virtually unlimited funds to the candidate. So is the first place to start by overturning Citizens United and that ruling?
I would certainly love to see that. I don't know that it's as simple as that. I guess I would rather than focus on the narrow sort of issue of Citizens United, I would rather sort of cast the net wider and say, how can we, as a nation, either subsidize or regulate or do something to take the money out of politics? Money obviously will always have an influence on politics, but I think we can mitigate it somewhat, either by financing elections or, I don't know, doing something to ensure fairness between candidates so that they can get their message out. Another thing to do might just be to regulate the airwaves in a different way and say, you know, the airwaves are a public trust and therefore candidates get X amount of time on the airwaves and no more, but they get it for free. That could help because obviously television advertising consumes an enormous amount of these campaign budgets. I wish I knew what the magic bullet was. I don't know that there is one, but I think there's probably a lot of small steps that we can take that will not only get big money out, but will hopefully allow candidates who aren't millionaires and billionaires to run for office, people who aren't necessarily independently wealthy, to rise up and take their seats in the legislatures.
All right, Michael, so how do you see the 2012 presidential election playing itself out?
I think Obama wins.
By a landslide? Is he going to have a mandate in his second term if he does win a second term?
Well, it's up to him whether or not he has a mandate, because right now I have not heard him articulate a vision for a second term. I think, like a lot of Democrats, I'm waiting for that. Hopefully that will be coming soon. I don't know that it's a landslide. It could be an electoral landslide. I think he could win electorally by quite a bit. I think in terms of popular vote, no, I think it's going to be close. But I do think from an electoral point of view, it could be a little more one-sided.
As a self-professed liberal, how do you view Obama's first term in office? I mean, it's been certainly a mixed bag. If you take a look at it, Obamacare was passed. That was one of his cornerstones. But by the same token, the economy is suffering right now. If you take a look at gun control, he has done absolutely nothing on gun control. Gitmo, he promised to close Gitmo. That has not happened. He did say that we were going to get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, which we are slowly doing. We have a timetable to get out of Afghanistan. So rate it for us, that first term. Why does President Obama deserve a second term?
Well, if you voted for him the first time, as I did, you would look at the sort of headlines of his campaign promises and go, a lot of that was accomplished. A lot of it wasn't, as you just pointed out. The big strike against him, obviously, is the economy has not improved. And so what are the reasons for that? I have no idea. But I've always been dubious of the notion that residents can exert that much control over a global economy. I do think he's been hampered by a lot of headwinds that haven't been in his control. You know, I don't know that I have a ton of confidence in his ability to get the economy back on track, but I know I don't have a lot of confidence in Mitt Romney's ability to get the economy on track. So, you know, overall, I guess I'd grade him A B minus or a B.
We're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Michael Ian Black, co-author of the book America, You Sexy Bee, A Love Letter to Freedom. Michael, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more about you and learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Well, if you want to read about the book, the best way to do it would just be to buy it. I mean, it's on Amazon or bookstores. And if you want to find out more about me, you can go to my Twitter feed, although a lot of it is just filthy jokes.
All right. Check out his Twitter feed for filthy jokes. And what is that Twitter feed, Michael?
Michael Ian Black.
Michael Ian Black. Michael, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks. And I'll be back with my next guest after these words from our sponsors.